Yankees Files podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are fans of a team that is undefeated, that just swept the Astros in Houston, that leads the American League East, that I think is really good, but I already thought that, and really nothing that was going to happen in that series would have changed it, but it's still true. The New York Yankees. Whipple, I can hardly imagine this first series of the year going better than it went. How are you feeling?
I mean, the vibes are off the charts. Like, I don't think you could script a better start to the season. And I think when the Yankees went down 4-0 in the first inning on opening day, my first thought, other than like, this sucks, because it did suck, was this is like just such a like tense, like intense way to start the season. It just felt like it was, you know, like opening day deficit in Houston. Usually opening day, you know, very ceremonial. This felt like the Yankees like were thrown right into the fire. Yeah. And I felt, not that anyone needs to cry for the Yankees, but it definitely felt a little harsh and unfair. And you know what? Like, given that it was about as tough of a test as you could have to start the season, like even in all other circumstances, it would have been four great games. Given the context of where they were, who they were playing, what happened last year, it was perfect. I mean, like, what better way to open the Juan Soto era than Juan Soto basically almost single-handedly winning three of the games? Like, it was just an unbelievable weekend. Great vibes, great baseball, so many things to talk about. But if there was any doubt that they, you know, the page was at least turned mentally on last year, I mean, like, definitely, you know, some good and some bad we can discuss. But mentally, I just feel like that question at least has been definitively answered, because the attitude, the approach, the feeling, like, this was as definitive as a statement as you could make. 2023 is over. It's a new season. It's a new team.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. They made a statement. I think that's exactly the way to put it. And to have, you know, the three comeback wins in Houston followed by what felt like a classic recent years getaway day Yankee game, right? Where they take the lead, some nonsense happens, they give the lead up. When that game was tied, I forget who it was, I'm sorry. I was interacting with, I think it was at NYYNYGGSW on Twitter, who was saying, like, look, you know, it feels like it's Houston's game to lose now. I can't believe they gave this away. It feels like they choked away the sweep, all that. And I was like, dude, I don't know. Like, you seem pretty negative for the Yankees being tied in the seventh inning in Houston. Ultimately, they ended up pulling it out. But it really did feel like there was a different tone to these games than there's been to certain Yankee games by certain Yankee teams of the past. And I mean, I think that's also a little bit of an exaggeration, because like the 2022 team, it felt like just won every game all the time, no matter what, especially at the beginning of the season. Like, they were going to figure out a way to win. You know, they had an extra innings walk-off win on opening day, and they came back in the next game as well. Like, but it's nice. It was a lot of fun rooting for the 2022 team, and it's nice to root for a team that gives you confidence that they're going to be able to win games. And this team right now has me feeling that way. And I think one exciting thing about this series, maybe not the best thing about it, as far as looking for indicators of how the rest of the year will go, is sure, Juan Soto was phenomenal, but the Yankees got a lot of contributions from guys who they will not rely on a ton during the year. And they didn't get a lot of contributions from guys that they will rely on a ton during the year. You know, Oswaldo Cabrera carrying your offense for four games is a welcome gift, but it's not something that you can, should, or will bank on. So anything you get from him is a bonus. You know, it was really nice to see John Birdie contribute, you know, an RBI base hit. It was nice for Anthony Volpe to hit that home run to give an insurance run. So it was a weird series in a lot of ways. And I don't know if we want to get into all those ways. I think at first I want to hear, if you had to boil it down to just one favorite thing about this series, what would that thing be?
I mean, for me, like, it's the fact that Juan Soto's on the team, but like, that's too obvious. I think more of like an element of the games, it's the fact that the Astros specifically the Astros bullpen, designed that back three, Presley, Abreu, Hader, designed to be a menace to the rest of the league. I mean, what the feeling when the Astros got Hader was like embarrassment of riches, you know, best lefty closer in the game, combining with two really good righties like that. If you get into the seventh, it's kind of over. And the fact that the Yankees in three different ways, in three different games against each of them specifically found a way to win, it's just really like, maybe it's not indicative of like how that bullpen's going to be for the rest of the year. And the Astros bullpen certainly is better than it was during the series. It like, it's certainly any bullpen, really, maybe like the Rockies bullpen's at that level. But for three really good pitchers to come into games where they had a lead or it was tied, and the Yankees to come back via the long ball, via some situational hitting, via some taking advantage of some walks. I mean, it was like a little bit of everything against a little bit of everyone. The result was the same. And I think given what the Yankees bullpen did, you know, basically perfection, that, you know, if that trend holds up, or if that's going to be a differentiator between the Yankees and other teams, if the Yankees can lay waste to bullpens like that and their bullpen can be that good, I mean, every success we saw from this weekend was at the back end of each of the games. And we know the Yankees bullpen can be good. I just feel like that's such a game changer. And if we're, you know, we're seeing this in action against pitchers as good as Hader, Abreu, Presley, like, I just can't wait to see, you know, what ordinary pitchers do when they run into this lineup. It was just such a fun kind of diverse way to win games. And I think satisfied, you know, the people, the stat heads and the boomers alike, I'll say it like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the bullpen disparity was a terrific thing to watch in this series. The Astros bullpen arms commitment to walking people and also letting people hit home runs was really admirable. It felt like the Astros bullpen arms wanted me to be happy for the first time in a long time, and I really appreciated that from them. On the other hand, you know, the Yankees did not get a ton of strikeouts from their bullpen, which was a little bit unusual given what we're accustomed to, but they also came through in just about every big spot, which was really, really exciting. I think one thing, maybe my favorite thing from the series, aside from the obvious, was the Yankees starting pitching. You know, certain guys labored for sure. You know, Nestor really struggled in that first inning and then got jumped by Myers in the second, but then settled down. Rodon allowed a bunch of base runners, but it felt like every time he needed a big out, he was able to get it. Stroman, you know, didn't allow an earned run, pitched six innings, looked really good. Schmidt had basically the best stuff we've ever seen from him. His velocity was up year over year. He was getting more whiffs with the cutter. Like, those are really, really encouraging signs for the rest of the year if that's an indication of what these guys can do. And I don't think, you know, right now the ERA of the Yankees' entire pitching staff is 2. I obviously don't expect that to continue, but it's just awesome that the pitching has started off so good. I think just even from like a vibes perspective for this staff, in the absence of Gerrit Cole, having traded Michael King and having let Wandy Peralta go, and, you know, not signing any of the big name relievers who were on the market, I think it's really exciting that they came out and pitched so effectively. And are they going to need to, you know, avoid walks better moving forward? Yes. Are they going to need to strike some more guys out moving forward? Probably. Are they going to have, you know, the kind of home run per fly ball luck that they've had to this point? Maybe not. You know, 5.4% would be certainly anomalous over the course of the season. But for those starters to come out and pitch so well and, you know, keep the Yankees in these games and not let things get out of hand if they allowed a couple runs was really encouraging. You know, if we look at the things that went wrong, like, you know, Nestor couldn't really hit his spots in that first inning. A little batting average on balls in play got to him. I don't mind that. Rodon, you know, struggled, but kept it together in a way we did not see him keep it together last year. I'm okay with that. He was throwing hard too, which was awesome. I liked your tweet about like, oh, what a surprise that he wasn't, you know, emptying the tank on a Wednesday afternoon in Dunedin or whatever. That was a good one. You know, Stroman, just a victim of the defense. Schmidt, he was out there third time through the order against a really tough top of the order and, you know, struggled a little bit. Loizaga had some bad, bad ball luck. But, like, what a terrific showing. You know, I was expecting, like, a bunch of, like, four-inning, three-earned-run outings, basically, just because, like, it's the beginning of the year. We know these guys have struggled coming back from injury, whatever. And they allowed, what, 8 earned runs as a staff in the 4 games. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, if you look at like the specific starts, like Clark Schmidt probably should have faced the top of the order for a third time, but like, I get it, like, you know, you got to get pushed at some point, and especially if the bullpen's taxed, like we're not, I guess it's one of the things, like, you're not going to fault Boone for doing that, but looking at the circumstances, yeah, the line could have looked slightly better if he had been protected more. And like you said, Stroman with the defense, definitely, like, I feel like when Oswald Peraza is back, like, he should almost be the third baseman or play every time Stroman's playing, because
maybe
we saw important a good infield defense is for Stroman. Like, his thing is sinker ball, ground balls. Like, that is going to heighten, you know, the advantages you get from playing your best infield defense. And he still gave up 0 earned runs. So at the end of the day, like, that was the best outing we've seen all weekend. And with, you know, Rodon's, like, definitely would like to see, you know, the command improve, but, you know, the stuff plus is great. Like, the velocity is good. I feel like it's hard to, for the first start of the year, you know, maybe we're still judging him, we being the collective Yankees fan base, like, judging him on last year. But I think with the clean slate of last year, you know, ignoring last year, like, this is as good of a first start you could have when looking for, you know, the stuff that is not necessarily, you know, on top of the hood, like the stuff, the velocity, everything beneath, you know, was more encouraging. I'd be more encouraged by that than like the reverse. If it was like, you know, he pitched like 6 shutout innings, but he was throwing 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, and, like, exactly.
You know, that the long term, like, it all will even out. So
yeah,
I think each starter had their own set of challenges and their own things they did well. But yeah, I think your point is, yeah, at the end of the day, 4 starts, 4 games that the Yankees were kept in, especially Nestor. I mean, like, that seemed like it was over in the second inning. And the fact that that game was at all close, I think, speaks to him as a pitcher, and definitely, you know, less of a concern and more of like a, you know, one bad inning and some BABIP issues as well. So I think it's interesting in, you know, without Cole, without having that like dominant guy you can count on every day, it definitely heightens, I think, some of the scrutiny we're going to give to the other guys. But it also, I think, shows that these guys can do it. I mean, they can do it well. Like, for an April, you know, beginning of the season, I think I was also in the camp of, like, I expected this to be a lot worse. And I'm encouraged by the fact that on the road in Houston against a good offense, when the springs haven't necessarily been the best, like, this is the result. And I still feel like Stroman's kind of a step ahead of everyone, but
yeah,
they're not too far behind. And that's pretty cool. Like, I can't wait to see what Luis Gil is going to do tonight. But yeah, it's not that I can't wait and, like, please save us, Luis Gil. It's like, okay, like, let's keep it
going. Let's see what we got. Yeah.
So that is pretty cool.
Yeah. And I mean, can we just appreciate the Yankees have won 7 games in a row in Houston?
I didn't realize how bad the Astros are playing overall at home too, like a kind of non-Yankees point, but geez.
Yeah, they've been snake bit these last few series, but the Yankees have won 7 in a row in Houston. I think it was Max Greenfield tweeted that Austin Wells is undefeated against the Astros in his major league career. He's never lost a game in Houston. Like, that was pretty cool.
But that's, if I could just interject for a second, you definitely have made the point before that, you know, people are comparing the 2022 Yankees to the 2019 Yankees to the 2017 Yankees, and the crossover just isn't as great as we think it is.
There's nothing there.
Right. It's Aaron Judge, and it was Luis Severino, and like, that's pretty much it. And I think just in the same way, like, if you look at who is on the field now versus who is on the field in game 4 of 2022, these guys, you know, you have the Juan Sotos who have been Astros killers. You have the young guys who have not really experienced that lack of success. Like, these guys aren't burdened by, you know, being on the field for Jose Altuve's walk-off home run.
Yeah. This is
a different energy. And I think that's important. Like, the fan base suffers, the collective history of the team suffers, but Austin Wells and Anthony Volpe and Oswaldo Cabrera, I mean, they don't suffer. They've been crushing Houston for the last year.
Yeah, it really is amazing. And I mean, especially like last year's performance against Houston by the worst Yankees team in 30 years, still to, what did they split in New York and then sweep in Houston? Like, to kind of own that team that went to game seven of the ALCS and then to come out without your ace, without Aaron Judge providing anything, without, you know, like, let's be honest, without Alex Verdugo or Trent Grisham, who were two, you know, major moves in the offseason providing anything, with DJ LeMahieu hurt, with Giancarlo Stanton, you know, having a couple flashes, but still producing, you know, below league average and striking out 43% of the time and not walking, like, to go into Houston like that and have the, you know, three comeback wins and one late rally against Josh Hader, like, I don't really buy into the idea that players see a team and say, you know what, they're just better than us, they have our number, we can't beat them. I've never believed that that's how the Yankees have felt about the Astros. I don't believe today that that's how the Astros now feel about the Yankees after these last two or three series against them. However, to the extent that there is any possibility that the Yankees could put a seed of doubt in the Astros' minds about their ability to compete with this Yankees team, I'm glad that they've done it. So a four-game sweep in Houston to start the season, I mean, there's literally no better result. But I really, you know, I was worried going into this series about if it went poorly, how would people react and what would the discourse be? And I'm really glad we don't have to deal with that. And I don't think the conclusions that we draw ought to be too grand. You know, I think whether the Yankees went in and swept or won or split or lost or got swept, it wouldn't really change meaningfully what I think about the Yankees. And one series really shouldn't change meaningfully what you think about a team. But I really like what we saw this series. There are things I don't like, and I'm sure we're going to get into those, but it's just really nice to come out and have such like a good, clean performance that there's not really like, there's a lot of positives to take away. And I'm very happy about that. And I was really worried about the alternative. And I'm sure at some point in the year, there will be a bad stretch, maybe many bad stretches, and we'll have to deal with that kind of nonsense. And there are some takes I want to call out, but I mean, I just can't imagine a start to the season with vibes much better than these.
And it's, I mean, the worst possible breeding ground for narratives is, you know, the field at Minute Maid Park when the Yankees play
it
there.
Really is.
So like, I don't think there's a better, in my mind, there's literally no better way to start. Like there's nothing that can put this down. You know, the Yankees weren't.
And these wins are in the bank. The Yankees own the tiebreaker against the Houston Astros, and it's April 1st.
And that's important. Like, it's important for playoff purposes now. It's important for home field. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've talked about it in the last 4 or 5 years when the Yankees and the Astros are playing and it's close, you know, 2019, 2022, like, that's a real concern that's on people's mind. Who's going to have the tiebreaker?
Sure, because the Astros are cheating at home, too. So it's really important to have the tiebreaker.
Right. I mean, not that I feel like this is at all indicative, but for the Yankees to have played three ALCSs at Minute Maid Park, you know, be on the road for all three to open, got 1-8 in that stadium. Now, I don't feel like that's indicative. I'm sure the Yankees don't feel like that's indicative. But like, if it's going to happen again, if you want to prepare yourself for that, like, and it's happened so many times that I think you have to say it's a possibility, it'd be nice to start at home. And now, I mean, that's one takeaway that like, nothing's going to change that. It's in the book. It's the fifth game of the year. And that's already decided. And that's pretty cool. Like, a pretty cool thing to have decided before, you know, sample sizes all solidify.
Whipple, do you know what Clay Holmes' ERA is this year?
Is it less than 0.01.
It is. Do you know what percentage of saves he has, save opportunities he has converted this year?
Is it greater than 99.9?
It is. And do you know how many saves he has this year?
Is it greater than 2, less than 4?
That's right. Clay Holmes hasn't allowed a run. He's converted every save opportunity he's had, and he has 3 saves. And yet, have you seen the discourse online in the last, I guess, 24 hours now about how Clay Holmes isn't a closer? Clay Holmes can't be trusted. Ian Hamilton should be the closer. Like, Ian Hamilton's a phenomenal pitcher. You know who else is? Clay Holmes. Like, what is this? Clay Holmes, since he became a Yankee, has been as good as Josh Hader. He's been better than Ryan Pressly. He is second in WOBA allowed of relievers with 150 innings in that span. He's seventh in WOBA allowed of 139 relievers with at least 100 innings in that span. He has an unbelievably low ERA. His FIP is under 2.7. Like, his WOBA allowed in that span is basically indistinguishable from the WOBA Mariano Rivera allowed from 2002 to 2013. It is worse than the career WOBA as a hitter that Zach Greinke produced. Clay Holmes, when he is on the mound, turns opposing hitters into hitters the quality of pitchers. It's insane that we still have this discourse after 2.5 phenomenal years by Clay Holmes in, you know, high leverage or closing roles for the Yankees. The only thing that ever gets Clay Holmes is BABIP. I looked it up. In losses and blown saves, of which there are only 5, going back to the beginning of the 2023 season, here is the BABIP against for Clay Holmes. 400, 750, 500, 1,000, 500. So either there are two things that can happen. One is Clay Holmes has some balls get through and he blows the game. The other is Clay Holmes' nails. Like, there's this narrative that, like, oh, and he doesn't throw strikes and he walks a bunch of guys and, you know, you can just tell when he doesn't have it. Like, no, Clay Holmes gets a bunch of weak contact. He gets balls on the ground and he wins games. Occasionally those balls sneak through and the Yankees lose. That's it. And I'm tired of this narrative that Clay Holmes has been anything but one of the 2 best relievers in Major League Baseball since he became a Yankee, and it needs to come to an end.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of ridiculous at this point. And I think people were spoiled. I mean, I don't know if that's the right word, but spoiled by the 2022 first half in which Clay Holmes was basically, you know, the best reliever we've ever seen. I mean, that's like unrealistic, just in the way that the Yankees aren't going to have a 2 ERA for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Clay Holmes wasn't going to have like a 1 ERA for the whole year or you know, his whole Yankees career. But during his time as a Yankee, his ERA is under 3, closer to 2.5 than it is to 3. And like you said, he's converted a majority of his save opportunities. And especially, you know, after the second half of 2022, I think the last year and a half, he's been a lot more consistent. I just think that people want to see the high strikeout relievers as a closer.
His strikeout rate is above average. He's just not one of those relievers who's striking out 15 per 9.
People can't handle the reliever relies more on ground balls, but you know what?
But like, people love Mariano Rivera. Right. Like, what is this?
The 90s Yankees ruined expectations of what winning means for the Yankees. I think Clay Hall or Mariano Rivera has ruined expectations of good Yankees closers. And Clay Holmes has been, if not the best closer, one of the best closers. I think what happened this week showed that, ground balls are going to be part of it, but ground balls are going to be part of it. Like, let's look at the Astros relievers. Fly balls out of the park, walk, poorly timed. There's so many things worse than some ground balls that get through. And even the Josh Haders of the world will give those up. I mean, Josh Hader has been so much worse than Clay Holmes in, you know, at different stretches of recent memory. Like, don't look at Josh Hader's 2022 season with the Braves or the Brewers.
Because Josh Hader only got $100 million this offseason. Clay Holmes makes like $11 and a bag of peanuts.
Yeah, it's going to be when Clay Holmes is a free agent, he's probably going to get underpaid. And if you want the Astros relievers at the back end of your pen, then by all means, because they didn't impress me more than Clay Holmes. And the fact of closer is you're always in the spotlight. No matter how many times you do well, the time you don't do well gets magnified. So I think that people are going to complain. Clay Holmes definitely has his moments, but pretty much every reliever in baseball does. Clay Holmes has a lot less of them for a lot more sustainable reasons than I think most other relievers. And we're not trading Spencer Jones for David Bednar, because I saw that on Twitter.
I saw that too. That's the guy insane. Who did the fire cash tonight. Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I think that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I personally
like, threw the game on Sunday. I think.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, so. I personally would not trade Clay Holmes for David Bednar. Although the Yankees do have a really good track record of trading for relievers from the Astros and turning them into one of the best closers in baseball. And yes, I'm talking about Clay Holmes.
Yeah. No, I mean maybe that means JT Brubaker is the next project.
Okay, can we, I just want to, I know, I'm not saying you think this, but I got more than one text when the Yankees made the JT Brubaker trade being like, oh my gosh, finally, we're saved. The Yankees went out and got pitching. That's not what happened. The Yankees took on JT Brubaker's rehab so that they could get international signing bonus money. The Yankees did not sign JT Brubaker to have JT Brubaker. And maybe they'll use him. Maybe they'll find some innings for him whenever his rehab is done. Maybe they won't. That's not what's important. The Yankees took him off of the Pirates' hands so that they could get international bonus money. And that's it. And I'm tired of the articles that I saw that suggested that the Yankees signed JT Brubaker because they want someone to fill some innings. He's on the 60-day IL just like Gerrit Cole. He might be back after Gerrit Cole. It's a ridiculous premise. It betrays a lack of understanding of how these moves work. The Yankees did not sign JT Brubaker to have him pitch a bunch, or at least it was not their primary motivation. Thank you.
I think he's under control for next year. So I think it's an added benefit. I mean, honestly, it really, to me, depends on the player to be named later to see.
Sure.
It's like, and we're not going to know that for weeks. I don't think people
we're not going to know until later.
Yeah, I think that's it's pretty minor. But I'm glad we're past the point where, remember, like when the Yankees would do these minor moves and everyone would be like, wow, Cashman really turned the season around. Like, thank God for Jake Cousins or at the trade deadline last year. That like annoyed me because clearly there's like two tracks like these moves can go on. And this is not the change the team track. But
yeah,
it was an objectively low moment to have Spencer Howard and Kenyon Middleton be the return at the trade deadline. But
I miss Spencer Howard. I'm sad he never got to make an impact as a Yankee. I will say, like, there are a lot of instances in which a lot of Yankees fans really suck. And there are people on Twitter who don't like when I say that, but it's just so obviously true. And the case in point is that the Yankees just swept their arguably biggest rival, or at least the biggest recent thorn in their side, on the road in four games to start the season. And two major narratives that came out of it are the all-star closer who converted three saves in three opportunities in those games is actually terrible. And the guy who is probably more likely than anyone else on the team to win AL MVP is cooked. Like, for a fan base that you would think is, after last season, really ready to be grateful for good things and excited about stuff, the impulse that many Yankees fans have to be miserable has been fully on display. And it's like, I was so pumped after Verdugo caught that ball that Tucker hit and the Yankees won that fourth game. I could not imagine just trying to find stuff to be pissed off about. And it's honestly impressive that there is such a large group of fans that can see so much stuff going well and then just, you know, nitpick the hell out of that stuff because, no, if the Yankees do something, it must be wrong. Therefore, even though they're undefeated, even though the staff has a 2 ERA, even though they, you know, put up a bunch of runs, even though they came back in a bunch of games, everything must be wrong because Aaron Boone's still there and Brian Cashman's still there. So, you know, it can't possibly be right, right? They got to sell the team, fire Boone, et cetera. Like, what? Maybe I just can't relate. Maybe I just see it differently. I don't think this is how you experience this team either, but like, I gotta say, for the first time, and maybe it's just because the vibes for me are so good that I can kind of appreciate and laugh at the stuff. For the first time, I was honestly kind of impressed that people were able to be so angry and so negative after the only thing that anyone has wanted for years happened. Like, what's going on, guys?
I think it's honestly, it kind of makes me laugh. Like, yeah. I don't know. I think you generally like get more offended than I do. And I think right now we can be in a position to laugh, but I think it's just like the kind of the New York online persona. Like, there's definitely a segment of Twitter that has adopted the like Frank Fleming Barstool, like,
yeah,
our team is cursed, we're never gonna win, no one has it worse than Yankees fans. I've been annoying my roommate who's a Nationals fan. Like, I just, yeah, we went down 4-0 and I'm like, no one has it worse. Like, this is a classic example. And then we won, and the next day I'm like, yep, we don't doubt, no one has it worse. And like Saturday is like, are you still gonna say this? I'm like, yeah, probably. So
this is the thing. It's hilarious as a bit, but so many people mean it so sincerely. Not just the no one has it worse thing, but like just the, you know, it's the thing that we talk about with Steve Rector is like, all right, if the way to understand these people is premise one, everything that the Yankees do is wrong. And if you look at things that way, then you understand how they feel. And so many people actually believe that so sincerely. It's insane to me.
Yeah, I feel like there's a two track, and you know, that's one track, and the other one is like you're saying, like people actually believe that. But like, I don't really know. Like, yeah, you can complain about baseball players all you want. You're never gonna have a team where 25 guys are all playing their best baseball at once. But
well, you might have the 2021 Giants.
That's true, but that was really weird.
Like, yeah, it's like a one in a billion.
Yeah, like still fascinating to look back on. But incredible. I think in terms of like personnel or in terms of managing, I thought Aaron Boone had a really good series. Like, what
did he do?
Like, he did all the things that he should do. He did all the
things. You saw the tweet, right? That was like when he put LaWisga in the game, it was like someone tweeted like, you know, another Boone disaster class or something. Like, gotta have feel for the game. Like, what? Right. So if he had taken Schmidt out before that inning, it would have been, he was cruising, why did you take him out? And then he leaves him in, and it's, you gotta know he can't go through the lineup the third time. Like, right. It's the classic. It was insane. Anyway, continue.
Well, I think even with Schmidt, like, I feel like there's a difference between, like, okay, we're just consistently going to pull people one batter too late, which is arguable to question. But then Schmidt, I think, is, you can't really question trying to extend a starter in his first start. Like, all the things that Boone did, I feel like it was a perfect blend of like the things he should do, the things analytically he was supposed to do, the things, again, and this is what actually kind of annoys me, when people are complaining about punt lineups and people resting after they're doing well, like, he didn't do any of that. I don't know if like all the players said we're playing, but I highly doubt that like every single player has that active of a hand in writing the lineup. I think Aaron Boone did, or at least did a little more of what people want him to do, of like, okay, you're going for the kill in a 4-game sweep. Like, you have some guys who want to play. Like, let's just play the hot hand. I don't know if that's good or not. I suspect we're going to see a few people sitting tonight, given what that series was. And I think that's totally fine. But like, he also, like, I feel like he, you know, used the starters and the relievers perfectly. He made the lineups in the way that you would want. Like, what didn't he do? Like, there's no rationale. And again, I've said that, like, I was on Team Fire Boone in 2020.
You were.
Like, I was 2021 wild card game was over. I was like, that's it, he's got to go. And I came around within the last, probably by 2023, the next time the Yankees like really struggled, and I moved off of that. And I think, so if you're going to think like, okay, the Yankees struggling is Boone's problem, the Yankees playing well is also,
yeah, the Yankees success has, like, to be a credit to him, doesn't it?
Yeah, right. Or like, the Yankees are playing well and, you know, he does one thing that doesn't work out, you're going to criticize that thing. And you know, the Twitter accounts that kind of spread that talk, and then that's like that's the dumb criticism I don't like. The ones where people are like, oh yeah, like this outcome clearly happened because of the narrative that I want to say.
Yep.
And it thus justifies that I was right all winter. And you know who I'm talking about. And
that, I do.
To me, the funny stuff is like people complaining and like sending the gifts, you know, when they, one little thing goes wrong. That's funny. The not funny is like people just trying to like act like they know everything and everyone else shouldn't participate in the conversation. And they clearly don't know half of what they say they do.
Exactly. So one thing that I really liked from this series is that the Yankees are actually top 10 in the league in strikeout rate, meaning like they strike out the ninth most of any team. I think that's probably something that would surprise people because I heard a lot of, oh, look at, you know, the new ball in play Yankees. Nope, there was a lot of swing and miss in that series. And thankfully, it did translate to some home runs. They are tied for eighth in home runs with five. I'd like it a lot more if they had something like the 10 or 8 or 7 that the Dodgers or Padres or Diamondbacks have, but you know, such is life. One thing that I really liked was their willingness to walk. They're third in the league in walk rate. Now, it's not like a lot of the Houston pitchers were throwing a ton of strikes, but the patience at the plate was nice. Guys who didn't walk a ton previously showed some patience. You know, Anthony Volpe didn't see a whole ton of competitive pitches, but he was walking more than we've seen him walk, which was really nice.
Just to go off of that point, I think Juan Soto's at bat against Josh Hader might have been the best at bat of the series. But what was the second best at bat? And this relates to people who are walking. What in my mind, what do you think it was? Or it could be in your mind too.
The second best at bat of the series.
It relates to drawing a walk.
Are you thinking of one of the bases loaded walks?
No. I think it was Austin Wells coming down.
Oh, yeah.
Abreu.
That's a great point.
Like, I just thought, I mean, I think Volpe's in the first game was also good, but I thought, like, for a rookie and, you know, your first, like, kind of opening weekend to really lay off some tough pitches and set that up. I mean, I forgot if that was two outs or not, but either way.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool to see Austin Wells look so professional. All weekend he did, but, like, I think it relates to what you're saying, where some of these at-bats were not competitive, but some definitely were, and they were really important. Yankees were a good, honestly, better than I realized, team in terms of walk rate last year. But the key is, last year, I mean, the walks just fizzled out. This year, if you're going to follow those up with home runs, like, that's the difference. And sorry,
exactly. Jack. Exactly. No, I think the patience was one of the best things that we saw from the Yankees in this series. I think, you know, on the flip side, the quality of contact for the Yankees was pretty poor. Yeah. Like, they had three barrels. They had three barrels in four games. I think a lot of their offense can be attributed to a 351 BABIP. You know, I think their hard hit rate put them 29th in the league. Let me confirm that. No, sorry, 26th in the league, which, you know, ahead of Toronto, who you expect to hit the ball hard. So I think, you know, we can let that stabilize, and Houston's way down there. But the three barrels putting them, you know, between Cleveland and Oakland in 28th was pretty tough. But then again, like, there you have the Braves also with three barrels. So I guess they were tied for last in barrels, but, you know, the Braves also had three. So we'll let that stuff even out. Aaron Judge clearly hasn't found it yet. Gleyber Torres hasn't found it yet. You know, Stanton, if he's going to find it, it'll come. Soto will do some elevating of the ball. He was, you know, everything he was hitting was ripped. Rizzo will do some elevating of the ball. So, like, I'm not worried about this team's ability to create quality contact, but definitely something that's, like, flashing on my radar is a team that relies on batting average on balls in play to score a bunch of runs is going to have some extremely cold stretches. And right now, BABIP luck is on the Yankees' side, and after these last couple of years, they absolutely deserve that. Maybe it will remain on their side, and that would be a completely just outcome. But I would like the Yankees to at least supplement some of that BABIP with some real damage, and I thought we were moving that direction on Saturday when Soto and Volpe and Cabrera all hit home runs. And, you know, we'll see what happens in Arizona, but that was something that I was like, you know, I'm glad they scored the runs. As I said on Yankees Files, like I'll always be happy when BABIP and just generally dumb BS goes the Yankees way. But it is kind of a flashing thing to me that a lot of the Yankees runs in this series came from relying on other professional baseball players to be bad at baseball. And or at least benefiting from other professional baseball players being bad at baseball. And I don't see that as a super sustainable strategy. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things like, yeah, like I'm glad that they won that way, but I don't think they're going to win that way all the time. I think that's why, you know, when people are like, oh, everything is going the Yankees way, I feel like that's code for like, this isn't going to continue.
This but won't last. Yeah.
Yeah, but I also, I mean, there are things that certainly were sustainable. Like, if you're going to pitch that way, then you definitely have more wiggle room to win games when you're not hitting
home runs. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And I'm just not worried about this lineup's ability to hit the long ball when the time comes, and it's not the first week of the season. And I feel like I just think the way this offense is constructed, it made John Smoltz happy, which is probably not a great thing, but it also shows that, like, it benefits the boomers and the stat heads alike, because the boomers have their lineup balance and they have more contact oriented guys. The stat heads have their guys who are just clearly good at baseball. And I think the results showed, like, no matter what you think about their BABIP luck being sustainable, they're working the count, they're getting on base, they're getting the hits that mattered. They have the guys who can continue to get those hits. And I think, like, it's not even going to be, you know, it's not going to require the series of circumstances that unfolded in the Astros series. There's going to be games probably even this week in Arizona. Like, you're just going to have, you know, you win like 8-2 because like five guys hit home runs.
Yep.
I think Thursday at the beginning definitely showed what happens when that doesn't work out. Like, you hit a double play every inning. Yeah. And that definitely, like, I don't think that's a good thing. But I think one good thing we can take from it is, if the one unequivocally good thing is the Yankees are a lot more athletic, both in the guys who are returning and the guys they brought in. And I think that benefits you both in the field, on the base paths. Like, you're gonna hit your home runs, but I think taking advantage of the other team's sloppy play is possible when you have athletic players. So combining like all of these things, I just feel like this offense is ready to do serious damage. And combined with pitching staff that we already know can do damage, It's great. I no matter what happens, you know, I think so much to be excited about based off what the first few games had.
And of course, the flip side of being really frustrated about grounding into double plays is there's traffic on the bases, and the best time to hit a home run is when guys are on base. So I hope the Yankees continue to put guys on base. I will say they're struck out more in that series than they did on the season last year. So, you know, there's this whole contact narrative and whatever. The major difference between the offense that we saw in this series and the offense in 2023 was not contact, but BABIP. I just want people to understand that. Can we have the Alex Verdugo conversation?
I feel terrible for him, not for a lot of reasons, but no matter what we're going to say, He got some serious laps in left field. Like, that was kind of cruel.
Yeah, so he definitely... One thing that's definitely true about Alex Verdugo in this series is...
He ran.
What?
He ran. He was running after...
One thing that's definitely true about Alex Verdugo in this series is he got to some balls that not every left fielder gets to, and he didn't catch all of those balls. And that gave an impression that Alex Verdugo had some fielding deficiencies. And am I responsible for tweeting something that took advantage of that impression? Yes. And do I feel bad about it? No, because I don't really like Alex Verdugo. But what I will say is Alex Verdugo's offensive, I don't want to say it's his approach, because I don't obviously know what he's thinking when he's up there and what he's trying to do. And a lot of people like to presume that they do know that about a lot of different players when those players haven't said anything about that. So I won't presume to know his approach. What I will say is that Alex Verdugo in this series showed us some good examples of why trading contact for slugging is important. He put the ball on the ground in a couple of big situations leading to double plays. He made outs on weak contact in other situations. He, in spite of working long at bats, does not walk. And I really don't understand it. You know, his walk rate has been in single digits every year of his career. It was 5.9% in that series. And that's not all that different from the 6.5 that he posted in 2022 with the Red Sox. Like, it is, I tweeted Alex Verdugo single-handedly disproves the notion that seeing a bunch of pitches is like makes you a productive offensive player. It's he is a mystery wrapped in an enigma in the sense that he has a really good eye and he sees all these pitches and he doesn't walk, but also like Alex Verdugo ought to think about what it would be like to strike out 24% of the time and pull some more fly balls, because like this thing where he just like is able to foul off a bunch of pitches just so he can ground out to shortstop, like that's not valuable. It's not. And this, if this series is representative of the type of offensive player the Yankees did get in Alex Verdugo, and I'm worried that it was because this is the guy that I'm worried Alex Verdugo is, then like that's really annoying. And it ties into the conversation about how I'm worried that the Yankees don't quite realize what they have with Trent Grisham and what the possibilities are for him. But like, really, you know, not a great start to the season for Alex Verdugo. But on the other hand of your point about, you know, taking some lumps in left field with, you know, getting to balls that not everyone gets to and not catching those balls, it was nice for him that he was able to make that catch on the Tucker ball to clinch the series. I thought that was good.
It would have been very bad if he did not make that catch.
Yes. Yes, like, that's correct.
Both, I mean, this podcast would probably have a little bit of a different feel to it.
It would be the sequel to the Benintendoff, the Verdugoff.
I'm not going to defend Verdugo.
Yeah, no, I know you're not.
And I think the key reason is like, yeah, like you said, the Yankees have alternatives. They have depth. And I don't feel like it's entirely necessary to run out Verdugo past the time when they should. And I'm very interested in what happens with Jason Dominguez.
Because, me too.
I mean, this stuff always works itself out. But like, it does. We are approaching, you know, probably some rehab in the next, I mean, I would say by June or July, it's probably you start to have the conversation of like when you can come back up. And I mean, obviously Judge and Soto aren't going anywhere. Stanton's not going anywhere. So again, you're not going to carry six outfielders. So you're between Grisham and Verdugo. One of those guys is a gold glove defender who has an extra year of team control. So the writing seems to be on the wall, and maybe they're going to be ultra, ultra slow with Dominguez, but
yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
I feel like this team is maybe they didn't go out and get Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery, and that means they're not all, you know, all in win now, even though it's very debatable if they're going to be worse or better than Marcus Stroman. But I think in their mentality, like in how they're going to handle call-ups and everything, I have a feeling that if Dominguez is ready to play and they think he can help this team just as they did at the end of last year, he might be back before September. It'll be very interesting. The one other thing I will say is that the defense is nice. And I hate to say anything bad about Jake Bauers. I think Jake Bauers probably should have been not playing the outfield.
Don't do this. You could say something about Aaron Hicks or IKF or Franchi Cordero or Willie Calhoun. You may not take this as an opportunity to bash Jake Bauers. This is not an arena for free speech. and thou shalt not bash Rake Bowers. Okay. Okay. Thank
you. All right. I'll say all of the left fielders, quote unquote, that the Yankees have put out there in the last year, 2 years. It's just nice to have a consistent outfield where we know guys can get to balls that both they should get to, and maybe we don't know if they can get to them, but they go outside of their range. And honestly, like someone like IKF is probably more of a target for this because someone like Bowers should have been playing first base and got pressed into duty. But IKF was like, and you know, maybe Oswaldo in left field's another example. Like they were intended to be playing the outfield for whatever reason, and it was just so awful to like see balls that, you know, everybody can catch except for these two. Hicks obviously had his own set of issues. Apparently he's arguing with Trout over Trout.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm not even going to touch that one, but yeah, I'm just happy to have a set of outfielders that maybe they're not the best defenders, but they're at least average with the potential to be higher than that. That definitely does make a difference. So Verdugo's offense, definitely an issue. I feel like he is the guy who should go whenever Dominguez gets back.
It makes sense that he would be the odd man out.
I want to see Trent Grisham play more. So like Judge should be playing more left, put Grisham in center more. Like I'm fully on that bandwagon, but it was cool to see an actual competent left fielder make some pretty good plays over the weekend.
And on this topic, you know, one, I think, major thing from this weekend, Juan Soto looked like a more than competent right fielder, which was not guaranteed. And there was an article that came out in The Athletic by Ken Rosenthal about Juan Soto's work with Luis Rojas and Jackie Bradley Jr. on his outfield defense. You know, there was the one ball. Was it Tucker who hit it that got over his head and bounced off the wall? And I think that's a play we've seen Aaron Judge make. So maybe that's, you know, unfair because Aaron Judge, as we know, is even a competent to good center fielder. So, you know, that's not where the bar should be for Juan Soto. But, you know, the people will focus on the play where he threw Dubon out at home and maybe the sliding catch as well from the Sunday game. But Juan Soto, you know, he made plays going to his right. He made plays going to his left. He made plays coming in. He made plays going back. Like, he fielded his position a lot better than I expected that he would. And that was a really nice sign. Obviously, defense isn't going to be a major component of Juan Soto's value, but it was really nice to see him playing right field as competently and effectively as he did. And as far as I'm concerned, like, everything you get out of Juan Soto in the outfield is gravy. So to see him, you know, dedicate himself to that over the offseason and then immediately get to reap the benefits of it, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he just ran really well. Like, I think the Bregman ball that probably was like double in the gap. And like, I kind of thought, I forget which game it was, but I mean, I just assumed that was going to be a double. And he kind of came out of nowhere on that ball. And that, like, the throw is, it was awesome. Definitely had the highlight reel. But I just feel like Juan Soto and like running well in the outfield were like the two things that weren't necessarily going together for me. And I mean, he showed it. Like, I don't know if it's just four games, but he definitely showed that he's more than capable of doing that. It will be, if, you know, fingers crossed, he's on this team next year. And of course, that's going to be a narrative all throughout the year. It will be interesting long term because, you know, he's playing right. Judge is going to play center forever, but they're both they're good, hopefully very good defenders there. You know, what do you do? I hope these are questions we can be having on our,
Having to figure out who the odd man out is between Judge, Soto, Dominguez, and Jones would be a great problem to have.
Right. But this is like, I mean, this is no ordinary collection of outfield talent.
That's right.
That is being assembled for the Yankees. Like, make no mistake. Like, this is, in terms of Yankee standards, it might feel like they've had good players before, but like, it not like this in the outfield. I mean, this is unmatched, and I'm glad to be having that conversation. I'm glad that in the Soto versus Judge MVP debate, like, there's a, you know, Soto got off to the start that maybe people thought Judge might, but almost without question, I feel like we're going to be sitting here in a week and like, oh, Aaron Judge just hit four home runs in the last three games. Like, now who's bet, you know, like, we're going for that kind of season. I hope we are. I feel like it's almost inevitable at this point.
Having Aaron Judge and Juan Soto in the same outfield is not exactly like having or like what it would have been to have Ted Williams and Mickey Mantle in the same outfield, but it's not unlike that. Like it could very much be like, you know, mid-30s Ted Williams and, you know, pretty prime Mickey Mantle if things work out the way we think they might. And that's pretty cool.
Stroman said, you know, you're going to be telling your grandkids about this, just like you told your grandkids, your future selves telling your grandkids about 62 and 20.
Exactly.
Like, this is a guy that is going to be there. And I hope it's for more than 1 year. But like, worst case scenario, if it's 1 year, like, you're going to be talking about that year. I'll tell you that.
So, Whipple, I had a shower thought the other day about our confidence ratings. Mm-hmm. And it was that, you know, you and I are both such believers in like regression to the mean over a large sample. And, you know, we try not to be super reactionary. It's kind of like funny or ironic that we close every podcast with a confidence rating, because I was thinking, you know, if you graph them, they would be just so steady, which I think is kind of funny. But anyway, we've reached that time of the podcast to rate our confidence in this team. You maybe kind of flippantly rated the Yankees a 10 in our season preview.
I went down to 9.
You did go down to 9. Okay. Where do you stand today?
Well, I actually had a shower thought about the or maybe it was a thought while I was doing something else about regression to the mean, and I feel like there's regression to the mean that happens during a season, but I feel like there's also sometimes regression to the mean. I think like you can have a bad season and then the regression to the mean comes next year. I don't necessarily know how I always feel about like, oh, this guy's having a bad season, but it's going to even out like starting tomorrow because that's who he is. But I do. So I'm kind of on the fence about that. You're probably more strongly in that camp.
Yeah,
I definitely feel like, you know, there can, you know, one season is bad, but the next will probably be better because that's who that guy is. And that has fueled our confidence in this team. And so I feel like maybe I was like, should have been more reactionary last year. But I also feel like this team,
you should never be more reactionary.
Okay. But I feel like this team has turned the book in a lot of ways on some bad years last year. And I, you know, if you don't always believe regression to the mean, you know, throughout a season, you should believe it now because there are clear signs that the team has turned the page. There's better personnel around the guys coming back from last year. And there's just nothing that we've seen that makes me think that, you know, people are going to collectively have a worse or just as bad year as last year. There'll definitely be guys who underperform, but I think year over year, the bar is so low that like we could have had a 2-2 week and probably found a lot of good things to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
The fact that it's a 4-0 week and just almost everything is running unequivocally positive right now is just so cool for us, I think, who are naturally positive about this team, naturally kind of highlighting the best things. And that's because there's a good team on the field. Like we wouldn't say that if we're talking about the A's. So,
yeah, with,
you know, always knowing that like the bar is higher for the Yankees, but the floor is also higher too. I feel like I'm going to go up to 9.5 because there's there's not a lot right now that I'm not confident about. Like the one thing that I worry about is Gerrit Cole. And I always worry about Gerrit Cole. And if Gerrit Cole was out for the season, I feel like my confidence would be down 2 to 3 points almost every week. But even if imagining Gerrit Cole is out for the season, like the team that is on the field showed that they're a force to be reckoned with. So knowing that they don't have their ace, knowing that there's a few other parts that aren't there, but also knowing that like we can stop kind of caveating that stuff because the guys who are on the field are playing really well. And they kind of collectively have said, don't worry about those guys. Like we are good enough to handle this Astros team. That makes me more confident than perhaps any stretch of good play, you know, any kind of singular factor player that then I've seen in a while. Maybe this changes, but like right now, that kind of collective, we're going to step up and say, you know, that stuff, Cole, LeMahieu, Peraza, Dominguez, don't worry about it. Like we just swept the Astros in 4 games. That is confidence embodied.
Yeah, I agree. So I was at 8. I'm going to go up to 8.5. You know, I want to see, I need to leave room for when Judge and Glaber start hitting. I need to leave room for when the offensive under the hood metrics start to improve a little bit. I'd like to leave room for, you know, continued improvement or steadiness from the starters, like, you know, for that narrative to start to change, and those guys to get, you know, a number of good performances under their belts. And for those reasons, I'm at 8.5, but I couldn't be happier with what I saw. I mean, that's a lie. I could be happier with what I saw this weekend from the Yankees, but I could not be happier with the result. And sweeping the Astros in Houston is as good a start to the season as I can imagine. And I'm very excited for what the next 158 games starting this evening will hold for this team.
Yeah, I think one quick other thing just relate to confidence. Like, it's something with Juan Soto where you're like, you just feel like you want to go to battle with him. Like, that's rare. Like, it's rare to have a guy who's, you know, we've seen kind of like a G-tarian kind of like, I know I'm going to win, but also hit like an MVP, hit like the best player in the league. Mm-hmm. So that part of it, I think should fuel confidence. And like, no matter what happens, like, we're going to war with Juan Soto and he's not going to let us lose. And that's not a conversation we usually have on this podcast, cause that is such a vibes thing. But like, I think you as the ultimate, like kind of the stat head half of this pod, you feel that confidence. And for you, I know you're going to admit that. So I feel like that's a win for like vibes.
Yeah. I remember in the 2013-14 men's college basketball season, UConn was playing Indiana at MSG in the 2K Sports Classic, I think it was. And Shabazz Napier just went off at the end of the game. And one of the UConn Twitter accounts tweeted, and shout out to UConn for making their second consecutive Final Four. One of the UConn Twitter accounts tweeted, "We have Shabazz Napier and you don't." And that's very much how I feel about having Juan Soto. And it's how I felt in the past about having Aaron Judge, and it's probably how I'll continue to feel about having Aaron Judge. But when Soto was up against Hader after Glaber got on base, like, I going into that inning, I very much felt like, all right, you know, get it to Soto, give him a chance. And my dad probably correctly said, you know, would it really be better to have Soto with a guy on and two outs than with a guy on second and nobody out? And like, objectively, he's probably correct about that. But in the interest of avoiding going to extra innings and all that stuff, you know, I just wanted the inning to get to Soto. And even though he was facing the only closer who's been better than Clay Holmes since Clay Holmes joined the Yankees, and even at that, it's, you know, marginal. And even though it was lefty lefty, I very much just felt, you know what? We have Juan Soto and you don't. And what a great feeling. And then for Glaber to steal second and Soto to poke the ball into left field and score Glaber, I think it was the embodiment of, you know what, we have Juan Soto and you don't, and this is what happens as a result of that. And that was pretty cool. Absolutely, I agree with you.
Hell yeah.
All right, so it's time for us to wrap things up. You can keep up with everything we do at yankeesfiles.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Yankees Files. Podcasts are available wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you'll rate, review, and subscribe if you enjoy the podcast. We hope that if you don't enjoy the podcast, you'll just subscribe, download, listen a bunch of times, and juice our numbers. Podcasts are available with video if you're listening on Spotify, and the entire video podcast goes up on YouTube. We're at Yankees Files as well. Whipple, that wraps things up. Any parting shots from you?
I don't have a gift for you this time. So
damn it.
I'm gonna say, let's collectively rate the John Sterling Soto home run call. So for those who didn't hear, it's a Soto photo that was wonderful. What do you think? Like, what's your rating? Because I feel like I was down on it at first, and then in the way that John Sterling calls always do, it kind of grew on me. I don't know. Soto photo's
tough for me. Wonderful. I like, I really, I really wanted him to do something with Childish Bambino, just given all of his Bambino calls, and we didn't get that, which was a shame.
I wanted him to sing an opera song because that's like always the best. But John Sterling's energy at the end of Sunday,
oh my gosh, yeah,
that was peak John Sterling. If Juan Soto does nothing else this team, he has brought John Sterling out of the malaise.
He made John Sterling 20 years younger.
Let's go. That is, if John Sterling gets that energy in October, like, I am there.
Change lives.
Ride or die with John Sterling in the Juan Soto era.
All right, so I'll wrap up with some takes that we requested on Twitter about the first series of the year. From Jacob says at @exit_velo, Matt Blake could mold me into a middle reliever with a 3.3 ERA and 1.1 whip if he wanted to. That's right. From rob.csv at good4rob, World Series bound, 100%. From Nicholas Kral at Kral Nicholas, we should hit more home runs. Could not agree more, brother. From SBHB at Seaball Hitball 2, we'll have to pay close attention to the Yankees' quality of contact metrics as the season goes along. Agree. Glad we were able to discuss that on this podcast. From Ryan at Ryan Jack NYY, Anthony Volpe will be this team's leadoff man next month. Not sure, but it would mean something really good happened. Also, I need a Jason Dominguez progression tweet from a reporter. Ryan, I'm sure you'll get that. And Homer at Yankees Homer, Volpe 116 WRC plus season underway. He looks miles better, albeit in a small sample size. Couldn't agree more. There's a lot. Well, I couldn't agree more about how much better he looks. I don't know that I couldn't agree more about the 116 WRC plus. There's a lot to like when you sweep the Astros in four games to start the season. Yankees are in for three in Arizona, an off day, and then three more against Toronto in the Bronx. We may have some, you know, programming changes in the next week, but we promise we will be back to talk Yankees with you after that. And until then, let's go Yankees.